Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. By DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday, until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. And by Hover. Finding the perfect domain name is incredibly easy with Hover. Go to hover.com/hamnation and save 10% off your first purchase.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 297 for April 26, 2017. Contesting Ethics and Power Supplies.
Hey, good evening, everybody. It is Wednesday night. It's 8 p.m. Central. You can do the math and simonize your watch for whatever time zone you're in. But universally, it's Ham Nation time. I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW. We do not have Bob tonight. Bob is having internet connectivity issues again this week due to some weather, apparently, with his satellite-delivered internet. So we have the other cast of normal cast of fools that we have. We have George Thomas, W5JDX, a couple of hours up to my north, up in Jackson, Mississippi. How you doing today? Oh, my God, can you turn that shirt down?
There's no volume control on it, Don, or I would.
That's an 11.
Yeah, we've got a fun show lined up tonight. I'm going to talk a little bit about Bob's power supply that he's been building here with the Pine Board project. And we're going to describe a little bit about how exactly that tube rectifier works.
Oh, good. I have a picture on my Facebook page of a tube rectifier that is throwing out all kinds of purple things, and the plates are glowing on it, bright red, just mere moments before it self-destructed. So, and that was a 1920s vintage tube, as I recall. It was a YouTube video. If you go on my Facebook page and go back a few days, you can probably find it. But it was very interesting. The tube had already failed electrically, and he was just seeing how far he could push it before it finally failed completely. It was fascinating stuff. We also have Amanda is coming up. She's going to talk to a couple of our AfterNet net controls. They're going to be talking about the Ham Nation 300 special event. And we'll have Valerie with the DX report. But first, we go out to the West Coast, the best coast, and it's Gordon West. And Gordon, you have a little friend.
I do. It's Kevin, KI6DHQ with BioNO. Hi, Kevin. Welcome aboard.
Hey, Gordon. It's great to be here tonight. Really excited to be here. I'm Kevin, KI6DHQ with BioNO Power.
All right. And York, Pennsylvania, your 62nd HamFest this Saturday. So for those of you in PA, check it out at yorkhamfest.com. Thanks, Brad, KO3Tango. Or the info on your 62nd HamFest in York, Pennsylvania. Now, Kevin, you're the battery guy, yet I hear stories about lithium and cell phone batteries going foof. Your lithium iron doesn't go foof, I hope?
Right. This is based on lithium iron phosphate technology, so it's completely different than traditional lithium ion batteries. The chemical bond's really, really safe, so no problems there.
Oh, good. Yeah, hams hate it when something bursts into flames. Now, the big difference between, let's say, a 7 or 10 amp hour lithium iron phosphate battery and a sealed lead acid battery, what's the difference between these two?
So if you take a look here, this is a lead acid battery over here. This is a lithium iron phosphate battery. So this particular battery is 15 amp hours.
Wow.
This is a 7 amp hours for an AGM battery. And so these batteries are different because it's about 70% lighter than a traditional lead-acid battery, and then you can capture all of 2,000 charge cycles from the batteries.
Wow, that's 2,000 charge cycles. So your batteries are going to hang around for, 7 or 8 or 9 years?
Correct, yep.
Yeah, much longer than that alarm battery, that sealed lead acid. And I like it. I use the lithium iron phosphate in my emergency kit because it keeps my HF radio humming at 13.2 volts. How does it do that? Everybody else is 12.4 on a lead acid.
So this particular chemistry has a nominal voltage that sits higher than traditional lead acid batteries. And so all of our batteries, if you can see here, they actually have the circuitry built into the battery itself. There's cells that arrange the pack, and everything is built into it. So that's how we can achieve the higher voltage.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Now, let's say we have a 20 amp hour, and we want to give it a fast charge because the DX is beginning to roll in on 6 meters, I hope, for field day. How much can I stuff to bring it back up to pretty much a full charge if it's 20 amp hours rated?
So it's about half its rated capacity. So you're looking at about 10 amps going into that. So the fast charge.
Wow, that's great. Now, all of your batteries are protected between overvoltage, undervoltage, high current, low current. What is this PCM deal all about?
Right. So inside of the battery itself, there's circuitry in there. If you can see on the camera, this particular board actually protects against overcharge, overvoltage, overdischarge, and overcurrent, all built into the battery itself. So it's really cool.
Wow. And it mines all of the individual cells to keep them all even, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So inside of the battery, that circuitry also balances itself.
Yep. Wow. This is exciting. Now, for a QRP-er like Don, he only runs like 5 or so watts. So what's the smallest battery that we can get Don to keep him on the air this weekend?
So it's going to be the 6 amp hour. That's going to be a good QRP battery.
Yep. Okay. How about a 50-watt mobile radio, FM?
So 12 or 15 amp hours.
Okay. And my 100-watt rig right here?
So 20 amp hours or higher.
Wow. So we understand that these are more expensive because they're a little bit more high-tech to build. What's the approximate cost per amp hour? Let's say 20 amp hours would be about?
Yeah, it's about $10 per amp hour.
Okay, so a 20 amp hour is going to be a couple hundred bucks. But remember, this battery is going to go 2 and 3 times longer than what would be a sealed lead acid. Now, what about when we go on field day and we've got to take an airplane to get from here to there, like Val does all the time? Is there a limit that TSA has on bringing a battery aboard in your own carry-on?
Right, so it's 160 watt hours, and then that information is available on our site, bionopower.com.
Okay, so where do they look up the technical specs again, especially TSA?
So that it's going to be on the website, www.bionopower.com, right there.
Oh, that is terrific. And what are some of the other services? I've turned down all these radios. What are some of the other services that use the BioNO batteries?
So there are actually other services that use the particular batteries can be used in other applications like quadcopters. They can be used in audiovisual communications, electronics applications, a whole bunch.
Wow. And you just did a boat show, and those Mariners, how big a battery do they want?
So they get like 200 amp hours for the house batteries. They can replace those with something like that, or 100 amp hours. No problem.
Wow. Isn't that something? And what we're hearing in the background is a weather alert. So I hope it's something mild, not big here for Southern California, being on the West Coast. Kev, again, where can they go to look up more information about this new lithium iron phosphate technology?
So, yeah, you can go to the website, bionopower.com. The products are also available to dealers across the country as well.
Oh, that is just terrific. Well, any last words that you want to add before we turn you over to George?
Well, we appreciate the opportunity to be here. And if you have any questions, let us know.
Thank you so much, Kevin. And all the major dealers carry your products?
Yeah, they're going to be available through HRO, also PowerWorks, among others across the country. Yep.
Well, terrific. So you have my personal endorsement because I've been using them for over a year and I have yet to have one fail. And I have yet one that doesn't last at least 2 or 3 days using the heck out of it. So, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on board. And again, one more time, where do they look up the specs?
It's going to be bionopower.com.
bionopower.com. All right. Well, I'm going to go listen to my weather alert and see what the heck is incoming. And George, I'm going to turn it over to you from Gordo and Kevin.
All right.
Okay, Kevin, that really sounds like an interesting battery technology there. And we look forward to hearing from folks out in the field who have those. We'll be back in just a moment, but first a message from ICOM.
Get out and get mobile with ICOM this spring. Base stations, mobile transceivers, handhelds, and more. ICOM has all the equipment to help make your spring full of adventure. Communicate with the touch of your fingertips. Perfect for small spaces, the IC7100 is the ideal D-Star option to communicate anywhere. Angled control head and touchscreen for quick intuitive operation, large internal speaker for clear digital audio, and it's perfect for multi-band and all-mode communications. Travel outdoor and enjoy the spring air. Back for a limited time, the IC7200 is a great option for hams wanting a rugged device to carry out into the field. Simple and tough with IFDSP, digital noise reduction, and a USB port for PC control. Ideal for the ham on the go, try the IC7300. It's a high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design, RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur and learn more about all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation. Register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you could win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for April, that new radio is going to be the ICOM ID51A+, dual band, dual watch, VHF, UHF, handy talkie, does both analog and D-Star, built-in GPS receiver, DV and FM repeater list functions, independent AM/FM receiver. You can download a free Android app for it, and a lot more. So go to icomamerica.com/amateur. After this, in each episode of Ham Nation, that's icomamerica.com/hamnation, register to win. And you want to do that after this episode because this is your last chance this month to get registered. ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. Go there, register today, and maybe we'll see you with some of that new swag. And now, Don, what's going on in the news this week?
Lots of stuff. Let's roll that beautiful Newsline footage, Vic. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2060, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, April 26, 2017. Good news from orbit. The International Space Station is back on the air on VHF from the Columbus module.
After a failure of a VHF handheld in October, a UHF replacement was retrieved from storage and put into use temporarily. The ARIS team began the process of getting the 17-year-old replacement handheld radio up to the space station until the new mobile radio is ready and certified. At the end of February, the SpaceX 10 launch vehicle, Dragon, flew to the ISS with the HT on board. On Friday, April 14th, it was finally unpacked. Rosalie White, K1STO, the ARIS International Secretary, shared the good news with us the day it happened.
The ARIS team was notified this morning that the radio was set up and turned on to 145.825, and the crew just found time finally after unpacking that 5,500 pounds of cargo that got delivered. So we're back in business again. The Ericsson that we sent up was the very last one that was in storage at Houston. It's only 6 watts, and our new system that we're developing is 25 watts. It's going to make it so much nicer. The audio will be so much better for the school kids, and that system is in the works. We've got the Kenwoods, but the power supplies are in the process of being built, and because they have to be space certified parts inside, they are extremely expensive. So if anyone is interested in helping out with some of those costs, they can go to the AMSAT website, www.amsat.org, or the ARIS, www.aris.org site, and contribute. If you're enjoying the use of the packet, we hope to be able to continue that for you and could sure use a hand.
So, if you need your space, consider donating to the cause. Reporting for Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
We're at the halfway point of the nominating period for the 2017 Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Young Ham of the Year Award. Nominations close May 31st. What does it mean to be named Young Ham of the Year? Here's Christopher Arthur, NV4B, with some insight.
I'm Christopher Arthur, NV4B, the 2000 Newsline Young Ham of the Year. Being chosen Young Ham of the Year remains one of the greatest honors I have ever received. It showed me that the amateur radio community appreciates leadership among the youth in our hobby. My early success in amateur radio has translated to a 10-plus year career in computer engineering. I have remained active in the hobby since I won the award, and I am currently an active member of the Muscle Shoals Amateur Radio Club, where I am involved in technical projects and presentations, field day, VHF contesting, and education and testing of new hams. The Yaesu FT847 I was awarded has been used to make over 20,000 QSOs since 2000. I hope that number continues to grow as I remain active in the years to come. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Christopher Arthur, NV4B.
You can find the nominating form on our website, arnewsline.org, under the YHOTY tab. We'll present the award at the Huntsville, Alabama Ham Fest in August. Christopher Arthur, NV4B, and other past winners are always there, so come say hello to them and congratulate the 2017 recipient with us. For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Christopher Arthur, NV4B, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. All right, good news in the news this week. Let's go ahead and jump straight into the solar report. We don't have Dr. T with us tonight via video, but she did give us some images. So the first one here, Vic, we'll give you the five-day solar storm outlook. The sun, she says, is finally quieting down. After nearly a solid week of storming, conditions should improve now over all the bands as we move out of the effect of the high-speed stream and expect some quiet conditions to remain through the weekend and easily into next week. And the five-day flare and radiation storm, Alex, she says, even though the active regions, next one now, even though the active regions that shot M flares at us a couple of weeks ago are back in Earth view, they're relatively quiet. This means that the solar flux remains at marginal levels, so radio propagation should not be great, but okay, and luckily, Dr. T says we have no big flares to contend with this week, so no threat for radio blackouts or radiation storms. And she closes with, enjoy the quiet. And if you'd like to follow her on Twitter, her Twitter handle is at Tamitha Scove, and that's what her Twitter page looks like. Now, there's been an interesting phenomenon on Facebook here lately with the closing of Radio Shack. People have been posting their receipts, and I have a few pictures that I've gleaned from Facebook. Now, the first one here is Jeff. K0 JSC. That's a fairly, that's a good sized Radio Shack receipt. That, of course, is Amanda's husband. Now, but that's not the best one. Let's look at Mike's KC0 LBY. Quite the receipt there. I'm not exactly sure what he bought, but probably everything. As you can see there, store closing. They were even selling the furniture out of the store. But Kevin W4KEV posted a couple of receipts. Here's his first one. And now let's show the second one because this one is pretty impressive. 26 feet long. 26 feet of receipt. He said he bought about $3,000 worth of stuff. It was 90% off. And there was a buy one, get one free on top of the 90%. So essentially that's 95% off. He said he bought about $3,000 worth of stuff. Paid about $160 for it. So if you have a long Radio Shack receipt, we'd like to see it. We're going to call this segment Show Your Receipt. If you want to email it to me, you can use my email. It's very simple. It's my first name and my call sign, Don, AE5DW, at gmail.com. Or you can post it to my Facebook or Twitter feed, either way. Don, AE5DW, at gmail.com. Send me a picture of your long Radio Shack receipt. And we'll show it. That's just 26 feet of receipt. Now, I don't know if one could actually generate a 26-foot-long DX Engineering receipt, but boy, wouldn't it be fun to try. DX Engineering is one of our sponsors tonight. And one of the good things about wire antennas are that they're very versatile, they're very efficient, and they're economical. They're a great way to get on the HF bands, and many wire antennas don't require acres of land either or a big checkbook. So selecting the right one is important, which is why DX Engineering has dozens of wire antenna models in stock, including options from popular manufacturers like the DX Engineering Handy Wire Antenna Kits. These handy, easy-build UWA center T and N insulator kits contain everything you'll need to build virtually any wire antenna type if you're a roll-your-own kind of a guy. Folded dipoles, inverted Vs, off-center feds, Windhams, Zeps, loops, more. Your imagination is the limit. Multiband operation also possible. Several kits available, so visit dxengineering.com to find the perfect one for your station. Just search the keyword easy build. That's easy-build at dxengineering.com to see your options. And as the name implies, chameleon antennas can adapt to practically any environment, making them perfect for portable, MCOM, temporary, or even marine stations. You'll see chameleon wire antennas in use by the military and government stations, too. Chameleons' slim profile makes them a great choice for HOA or deed-restricted properties. They offer a versatile Windham design that covers 40 through 6, will handle up to 250 watts single sideband, 100 watts CW. The antenna comes packaged in a handy travel bag, too. You can toss it in your field aid pack or go kit. That's chameleon. And with a keep-it-simple approach, Buckmaster's off-center-fed dipole antenna offers an excellent performance and reliability choice. DX Engineering carries 6 of Buckmaster's acclaimed models covering the most popular HF bands. There's a 4-pole, a 4-band dipole, a 7-band dipole, and an 8-band dipole. They feature permanently sealed center insulator that houses the potted balun, held in place by a 1/4-inch stainless steel eye bolt. Each antenna is fully assembled, ready to install. They use high-quality suspension rope, pulleys, and line grips. They recommend those, so it's not going to fall down on you. Need help selecting the right wire antenna? Go to DX Engineering. They can help you refine your choices. And, of course, DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern. If it's in stock, it'll be on a truck headed your way tonight. Proven products, expert advice. DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. Request your catalog or shop online 24/7, 365. DXEngineering.com/HamNation. DXEngineering.com/HamNation. Thank you so much, DX Engineering, for helping us put our little show together. Now let's go to Valerie. She's got an interesting topic tonight, ethics in contesting. Valerie?
Well, thanks, Don. Thank you, Don. Well, for those of you that are into contesting, you may have heard that CQ Worldwide Sideband Contest, which is one of the biggest ones of the year, they just came out with their results a couple of weeks ago. And along with the results, they published the list of 80 stations that were disqualified for allegedly cheating. Now, here's a photo of that. And I did cover up their call signs, if you want to show that, Victor. And I don't want to, you know, show their call signs, but you can see what their infractions were for. And so kind of give you an idea of what we're going to be talking about tonight. So I thought who best could help with that none other than Ward Silver, N08X. He is very big in the contest community, and he has written several contesting results articles for the magazines, and he's also given presentations on ethics in ham radio, especially with when it comes to contesting. So, and we're going to also go over a lot of Q&A on what you can and can't do, or what you should and shouldn't do in a contest. So here's that interview. Hello, everybody. I'm joined here with Ward Silver, N08X. He's a big-time contester. He is the managing editor for the ARRL contest branch. Ward's been licensed back since 1972. And the big thing he does now that I'm really impressed with is he does do a talk on ethics in contesting. Well, not just contesting, ham radio, right, Ward?
Yeah, that's right. Contesting is just one little piece of ham radio.
I thought in lieu of, for those of you out there probably heard a lot of stations got DQ'd for CQ Worldwide Sideband, which is another way of saying disqualified, about 80 stations to the tune. So I thought it would be timely to kind of talk about ethics in ham radios.
Okay. Well, ethics is what you do when nobody is watching. And morals is knowing the right path, and then ethics is choosing the right path, you know, actually taking it. A lot of us have that little, you know, angel devil thing going on. You know, I could do this, I could do that. Nobody will know if I turn the power up, all this kind of thing. Most of us know what's right and wrong. And contesting ethics is in the heat of competition, and you really want that certificate, you want to beat your competitors, well, you got to still play by the rules. So ethics is playing by the rules, even though there's no judge right there to look over your shoulder. That's what it's about.
And say you were to kind of bend the rules, break the rules a little bit. I mean, the worst part is once you fall under speculation from friends and other hams, it's kind of hard to come out of that, right?
That's right. It's hard to come out of it with other people, and it's hard to come out of it yourself. Every time you cheat a little bit and you think you get away with it, I think I can't remember who gave me the original metaphor of it. It's like a little sharp wheel that digs in your conscience. And every time you let it dig in, it gets a little duller. And so after a while, you just stop caring about that. But other people notice, and eventually you build up a reputation. Oh, that guy runs too much power, or he poaches packet spots or something. And basically it all boils down to when you're not there, they look at each other and they go, he cheats. So you don't want to be that guy. You just don't. There's obviously no money in this, no positive money in this. So what are you cheating for, that you get this little piece of paper or a plaque at the cost of everybody watching you go by and then saying, he cheats?
And I'm guessing some people may be cheating, but they don't know that they're cheating. I mean,
well, there's a difference between cheating and having a rules infraction. And I get this a lot from people that say, why are you taking context out of my log? I wasn't trying to cheat. Well, it's like offsides in football, okay? You jump offsides. They're not accusing you of trying to cheat. It's just an infraction. So you whistle a play dead, you get a 5-yard penalty, you play over, okay? And there's an incentive to follow the rules. And now, if you read the rules and you say, well, I think I can get around that rule, that's cheating. Okay, so that's the difference. And some people, if you don't know and you get dinged for it, that's on you, really. So read the rules, know what the rules are, follow the rules, you'll be in good shape.
What are some of the more common things that people do when they cheat when it comes to contesting?
Okay, when they cheat. Well, I'm not, you know, the laundry list, and everybody's out there, you can do this, you can do this. Well, for example, power is probably the most widely abused thing. You enter as a QRP station, but you're really running 100 watts, and people eventually know. Another one is cheating on all the various little band change limitations, and when you're supposed to be not having two signals at once, so you have to jump back and forth, and then you make a mistake, so you take a contact out of the log, or you have to take off time for a while, and then you sort of shade it on one end, and you change those times of the QSOs in the log, and then you change the time in the other one. It's called rubber clocking. Now that we're all electronically checked, it's like 80-something percent. 83% got checked in CQ Worldwide this year. A lot of that stuff goes away. So
if you work the guy at 12:53 and 20 seconds, and it's in his log then, but you're out of band change violations or whatever, so you put it at 1300 instead of that, you're going to see that 7-minute difference, and you're going to know.
So they see that in the log. Your times are right on, and then suddenly they start getting behind, and then you're off, and then they're ahead, and then finally they come back to average. So what you've done is sort of, you know, move that window. It's so much work to cheat. Wouldn't it be easier if you just put that effort into operating clean in the first place? So,
well, and some people say they're not assisted, and they're assisted, and there's ways to tell with that. So it just makes more sense, like you said, just don't cheat.
Self-spotting and all sorts of strength.
I mean, is it really worth getting that certificate that says you're first place when you know in your heart of hearts you did it unethically? So,
yeah, it's bragging rights. You know, it's like boys will be boys, but, you know, boys, knock it off. You know,
well,
you're gonna get caught.
Think some people unknowingly do things like when I just got my CQ Worldwide log back, I started going through my Not in the Logs, and the first gentleman I came across is Not in the Log 3 minutes into the contest. So in CQ Worldwide, all the logs are public. So I went and I looked up his log. Well, his log didn't start till 15:53. I worked him on 20 meters, and his log started at 15:53 on 10 meters, and he was 10 meters only. So he must have decided to change in the middle of a contest from all band to 10 meters only. And I ended up not only losing that QSO, but two more, I believe, I got penalized. Is that correct? So,
right. Yeah.
And he didn't even have to do that, right?
Yeah, you get additional QSOs taken away as well. If you're a single band entry, even if you make contacts on other bands, send all of the contacts in. The log checking software takes care of that. I think some people are just unaware of that. They're not trying.
So if he worked 50 guys on 20 meters, he doesn't have to erase them. He's not going to get penalized for that at all. It's only going to look at his 10-meter contacts. It's going to ignore anything he made on 40 or any of the other bands. It's just going to ignore
software.
That and with no penalty. So you might as well turn in the whole log so we, the other people you contacted, don't get penalized, right?
Correct. The log software, the log checking software, looks at your catalog and says, oh, 10 meters only. Okay, I'm going to cross-check these other ones, but I'm only going to count toward your score, the 10-meter contest QSO. So it doesn't matter. Just leave them in there. You don't have to take anything out.
Now, what if I accidentally make a QSO with somebody, and as soon as I entered, I realized that was my 11th band change. I was out of band changes. You don't want to delete that because that's unethical. So can I leave it in there? I mean, I want to make sure the other guy gets credit for it. I don't want to hurt him. What's the best way to handle something like that if you made a mistake?
Well, in every other sport known to mankind, you get penalized at that moment. You know, the umpire goes, and you take whatever penalty it is that you get. The ethical thing to do is you submit a log with what you did in the contest.
And
you
take the penalty.
You know, that's the way it is. If you feel like it's okay on your end for whatever reason, there's this mechanism for CQ contest where you can put X hyphen. The hyphen is important in front of the QSO, and the software will just skip it. You don't get a penalty that you deserved, okay, but the other guy or gal doesn't get a penalty that he or she did not deserve. So you're doing a good thing at least halfway when you do that. But
you're
really,
just getting a little bit pregnant.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Now, in the heat of the moment, you're contesting and you're searching and pouncing and searching. All of a sudden, you work somebody and you were out of band.
Yeah.
Same thing on that.
Same.
They take the penalty.
You know,
do you get the penalty on that one?
Penalty. You know, with SDRs recording everything, what they'll see in the log checking is somebody running on 7035, listening 7228. And they'll hear that, hear that, hear that. And suddenly you pop up working them on 7035 or whatever it is. And they can go back and check that and say, yep, you called out a band. And they'll take that log, that out of your log one way or the other. And if you are sloppy and make a habit of it, you deserve to be disqualified.
If somebody's sitting there running a frequency and it's getting really slow and it's calling CQ, CQ, so he decides to spot himself using his friend's call sign. That's a no-no, right?
Right. Or asking somebody else, hey,
texting your friend and asking them to spot you.
Right.
Now that's self-spotting. Anything
that allows people to go find you and make contact with you that they otherwise would not is not okay. It's like in state QSO parties, a lot of them say, yeah, by all means, you know, spot yourself. We want activity. But in CQ Worldwide, ARL, other major contests, ixnay on the OTS Bay, okay? Don't ask your friends to do it before the contest. Say, hey, if we all get together and every time I hear you, I'm going to spot you. That's cheerleading. It's just not okay. There's a document on the ARL website called Guidelines for HF Operating, and it's in the contest area. If you Google it, you'll find it. And it was written by the CAC some years ago. It's been updated, and it includes input from all the major contest programs at the time. And a lot of these frequently asked questions and situations are addressed specifically in that document. It's good reading.
Well, sounds good. And I have another question, too. Say you're working someone in, and they give you the zone maybe 8, and you know they're in zone 4.
You log what they sent.
So, and they turn their log in as zone 8, even though they're in zone 4.
Right. The log checkers go, well, that's screwed up. And people are going to log them in 8 and 4 and 9 and everything else. And so they check a little box in their software that says, NV9L was unstable in this contest. So don't give anybody any penalties based on Val's zone because she sent the wrong zone and people were correcting and stuff like that. So just log what they send you.
Okay, so log exactly what they send, even if you know they're wrong.
Yeah, this whole thing of log washing. You get done with the contest and, you know, the contest is over. 23:59:59, that's it. So what do you do after that before you send in your log? Well, if you've made notes to yourself during the contest, NV9P is really NV9L. Okay, think. By all means, go back. There was a note that you made to yourself during the contest. That's okay. That was part of the contest during the contest. What's not okay is going, okay, I'm going to play back the audio and I'm going to check all my stuff. Oh. And people actually used to do
people
that.
People do that? That's crazy.
Yeah, but they did it. You know, they would tape record the whole thing and they would just go as fast as they could go. And then they would go back later and figure out what the call signs were and put them in the log. And that's been...
No, what if you misspelled somebody's name? Can you fix the misspelling? Or are you going to get penalized if you spelled Dwayne like D-U-A-N-E instead of D-W-A-Y-N?
Or Chris or Gene or, you know, any one of the ambiguous... Yeah. Generally not. And another thing is cut numbers. If you are copying, like in the WPX that's coming up here at the end of May, and somebody's sending... E for 115 or something like that. What do you log? You can, and trust me, the log checkers deal with all of that. They convert all the cut numbers to the numerals that you were trying to get. So don't obsess over it. If you know that that's 115, enter 115. If you want to enter AAE, enter that. That's okay. The thing is, the contest is over when it's over. Anything that you write down to yourself or note during the contest is fair game. But after that, it's not okay, in my book, to go through and say, you know, I worked NV9L on 3 bands, and here I've got NV9R on another band. I think I'll change that to L. Nope. That's not okay.
How about if you get an email? I've had this happen. I got an email. Yep. Their serial numbers were all screwed up. They gave me a 2. They meant to give me a 4. Can I go in?
Or can you confirm that we made a QSO?
No, not that. Someone sent me an email. They gave me like a serial number 2, and it really should have been like a 6 or something. It was like right at the beginning, like they were having trouble with their serial number or something.
You say,
and
sorry.
Said, so you're really serial number 6. Can I go change it to 6?
I don't. Nope.
Log
what, you know, yeah, everybody gets caught in that at some point.
Okay.
The thing is, right after the contest, as soon as you possibly can, get rid of your log.
He didn't want to see me get penalized because he gave me the wrong number. So I did change it. So I guess I...
Well, there is this category of stuff happens. And it happens to everybody. You know, I go through my log later and I go, oh, man, I was sending the wrong something. And so I go through and change it, not thinking that what I'm doing is creating errors in everybody else's log. Don't change your log after the fact. When it's over, it's over. Just send it in. That way you won't forget.
Right.
You'll never miss.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good thing to say, is make sure you send your log in right away. I mean, because nowadays, some of them, you have 5 days to get them in. I mean, you got to get them in right away. Nothing worse than doing a whole contest and not getting your log in time. So
yeah, and then the results come out and go,
where am I?
Oh, you know, and it's like, what happened? I lost an all-time high score in one contest and category because I forgot to send in my log.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Steve Martin said, I forgot, you know. So
and I've done that where I haven't sent in a log in because I was just working a bunch of guys, and then I stayed in the chair longer than I meant to. It was just having fun, and before you know it, I had like a whole bunch, and I was just kind of playing for fun for part-time, and I never sent the login. Finally, they emailed me and said, you got a lot of contacts with other people. Why don't you send your login? So I sent my login. I got first place USA in my category. It was, you know, some European contest. But send your logs in. Now, here's a really important question, Ward. What's the set list for the Spurious Emissions coming up next month?
We got nine, count them, nine new songs this year, and it'll be fun. And
are you doing the cover of the NCJ, which is a takeoff on the cover of the Rolling Stones? Okay.
No, that was out. We've got some from the band. We're revisiting some Pink Floyd. We got all sorts of stuff.
So anybody that's going to be in Dayton, you don't have to be going to contest. You show up Friday night. What are you guys going about, 9 o'clock?
10 o'clock is when the show gets rolling.
10 o'clock in the super suite or the big ballroom on the second floor of the Crown Plaza. So Uber is in Dayton. Take an Uber over there, and there's Cash Bar. And lots of fun.
Sometimes we have cute girls come up and sing, too. Yeah.
Yeah, some that shouldn't. I did have fun singing.
Come see the band. It's fun. Something old, something new. Yeah.
It's a blast. We're just
having a great time. Have a drink. Have fun.
Yep. Well, thanks for joining us and kind of clearing a lot of things up about contesting and ethics. And I do appreciate it. And I will see you next month.
Yes, you will.
Sorry that went long, but, you know, it's been very topical. I know all the contesting reflectors have been blowing up constantly for the last 2 weeks, so I wanted to get a lot of questions cleared up. Hopefully that helped. Make sure you go to the ARRL link that I put on there, answer a lot more questions. And that's all I've got for this week, so I'm heading it back to you, Don.
Right, thanks. Good stuff. Really good stuff on the whole ethics and contesting thing. That's something that everybody kind of needs to pay a little bit more attention to. Very good. Appreciate that. All right. Let's talk about another advertiser here or sponsor on Ham Nation who helps us bring this to you. And that is Hover. Do you have a website? Are you thinking about getting a website? Then you need to know about Hover. If you have a great idea for a blog or a startup, you need to give it a great domain name. And with Hover, it is incredibly easy to set up your domain name with the most popular website builders. Hover has over 400 domain extensions. Of course, you can get .com and .net, but you can also get .design, .tech, .pizza, .ninja, .horse, .probably whatever you can think of. And once you find your domain, you can use Hover to connect your setup your domain automatically with your website in just a few clicks. You can also use it to get more on-brand or professional email address. Your domain works with whatever email programs that you're already using. And when all you want to do is buy a domain name or an email address, you shouldn't have to opt out of page after page after page of add-ons and things you don't want or need. That's why Hover only offers domains and email. So you can focus on finding a great domain name and then get back to working on your great idea. And unlike most other domain providers, Hover includes free Whois privacy with all supported domains to keep your information confidential. And if you already have multiple domains scattered across other domain providers, you can save money by bringing them all together on Hover. Eligible domains will include Whois privacy. And with volume discounts, the more domains you have in your account, the more of a discount Hover will automatically apply to your account. With Hover, there's no more digging through help articles to figure out how to get your domain working. If you need a hand, just give them a call. Hover has awesome support teams, and that team is there to help you. No annoying phone trees or transferring to another department either. I want you to find your domain name for your idea. It's easy to do at Hover. Go to hover.com/hamnation. You'll get 10% off your first purchase. hover.com/hamnation. Hover, domain names for your ideas. That's a cool thing. Start your own website. Maybe, whatever. There you go. Hover. They'll help you out. You know, Kevin and KC0LBY Mike and Jeff, they weren't the only ones going to Radio Shack. Burke, one of the Twit staffers, also went to Radio Shack, and he doesn't just have his receipt. He has a whole stack of stuff on the table. Look at Burke's haul from Radio Shack. Oh, my Lord. Where's the receipt? I know he's got about a foot and a half long receipt. Not quite 26 feet long, but...
I think he took it with him, but...
It took it well. Well, yeah. Of
I'm really wondering if all of that is from Radio Shack, but
it's count up his savings. That's good stuff.
You noticed the Q-cat there in the middle?
Yes, of course. Wow, I haven't seen one of those in forever. That's awesome.
That's the key piece, I think.
That's well, of course, yes, being the centerpiece of the collection of the ensemble, if you will.
With,
all right,
with
that
zip ties
that
still
is
attached.
Good stuff. All right, good stuff, Burke from Radio Shack. Now let's check out another guy who has spent ample time in Radio Shack, usually buying solder, George and Smoking Solder.
Well, thank you, Don. And if I would have known Dr. Scove wouldn't have been here tonight, I could have done the space weather for you. But, oh, well, we missed the opportunity
like
on that.
She's prettier than you are.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
prettier
than you
are. And she
knows
what she's talking about, too. And with me, that's optional.
Yes. Well, me too, clearly.
Well, what I'm going to talk about tonight is the power supply that Bob has been working on to go with the pine board project. And let me do one thing here. There's Bob's power supply. You know, he showed us several weeks ago how he was building that. He was using a 6X5 GT dual diode tube there. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about how that schematic works. You know that tube, if you look there are two plates in it. One, two, and there's a cathode right here. This one is an indirectly heated cathode. That means that the filament is sitting right here, and it's warming up the cathode. Well, if you've never worked with a tube diode before, you may not exactly see how that works. Well, I'm going to simplify it for you a little bit. If you were to do this with regular diodes, this is essentially what you've got. Two diodes connected there on either side of the transformer. You've got a diode, and they just go on out to the filters and on out the output. Now, the reason that we've got two diodes, or he's using a dual diode type of tube there, is because, well, let's look at the waveform first. You know, just regular 60-cycle AC, you've got a 60-cycle sine wave going there. We're rectifying that to DC because that's what you need to run your circuits with. If we were to use a single diode to do that with, then we would only get half the voltage and half the current. In other words, only the top half of the peaks. The bottom halves would be missing altogether. This is right here. You see one plate, cathode, filament, and it goes on out. That's all we would get is just the top halves of those waveforms. The bottom half would just be totally wasted. So if we use a tube that has two diodes in it, then we're getting the top half, and we're also getting the half where it went down. Now, since we've got the diodes, you know, in two different positions there along that waveform, we're actually getting 120 hertz from that instead of just 60. But we've got a more constant duty cycle from our AC signal there. So the way it works, it heats up the cathode. When the cathode gets hot, it starts emitting electrons. They need somewhere to go. And whenever the plate, either the one on the top or the one on the bottom here, whenever that swings positive, those electrons, you know, opposites attract, so those electrons rush toward that plate. When they get there, it's going to cause current to flow. When current flows, that cathode and the plate are going to get at the same potential. In other words, the resistance between those two is going to become very low. It's not zero, but it gets pretty low. So when that happens, that top half of the waveform there is going to come on out and go on to our output. On the opposite half of the cycle, that's going to happen here with the bottom plate. So essentially, it's just sitting here switching back and forth between the two, so we're using both halves of the waveform. So after that, we're going to end up with something that, well, it's going to look kind of like this. If we filter it, though, you can see it's going to be a DC, and we'll only see a little bit of the remaining tips of the waveform there. We generally can't filter it perfectly. You could get a lot better, but this is essentially what you've got, 120 hertz there. So what Bob has got here is two pi filters. You can see there's one half right there. It's a resistor and two capacitors. If you slide over, there's another pi filter right there. They're sharing the capacitor there in the middle, though. And these 1K resistors are also going to drop the voltage a little bit, so they're kind of serving two purposes. So that's what you got. Tube rectifies both halves of the waveform. Then the filter section here smooths it on out, so we've got a smooth DC. And out here on the output, we've got 150 volts DC. So I hope that explains it a little bit. It's just a diode, or actually it's two diodes. So now, you know, last week we didn't ask a question, but we're going to ask one this week. It comes from Gordo's Technician Class Amateur Radio Study Material here. I'm going to be doing a ham college show this Saturday night at 8 o'clock Central at live.amateurlogic.tv. And this is one of the questions that I'm going to ask. Which of the following establishes grounding requirements for an amateur radio tower or antenna? Is it FCC Part 97 rules, local electrical codes, FAA tower lighting regulations, or the underwriter's laboratory? So what do you think? Who establishes the grounding requirements for our amateur radio towers? If you think you know the answer to that, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and we're going to give away an autographed copy of Gordo's Technician Study Guide. So this would be great for those who are sitting in the chat room there and they're wanting to become hams. This is the perfect material to study with. Or if you know a young ham or someone who would like to be a ham and they need something to study with, this is the best gift you could give them right here. HamNationContest@gmail.com. Send your answer to me, and we'll give this away next week. And now let's go to Amanda, who's got more information on the upcoming Ham Nation 300 special event stations.
Well, thank you, George. First, I'd like to introduce two of the people that made that happen. We have joining us Kevin, KC7FPF, and also Steve, W7UDI. Thanks, you guys, for joining us tonight. And they're a big part of this, you guys. Every week when you get on our after show nets, who do you talk to? Maybe one of these two guys. Kevin, I'm going to go to you first. And Steve, you can follow after he answers. First, how did Kevin, how did you become part of the Ham Nation Net team? What got you involved?
Well, it's just... I had been listening to the net for quite a long time, and in being down here in the southeast part of the country, a lot of times Al and Dale and Mike couldn't hear this part of the country, so I just said, well, you know what, maybe I can help them out one night. And so then one night on into two nights and three nights, and I said, well, you know what, maybe I'll just ask them if they want me to become a controller. So after that, so now after about a year and a half, I've been doing the 40-meter net.
Well, very good. And we thank you because you have a booming signal out of Florida. And you guys can trust me on this. Steve, same question. How'd you get involved?
Oh, I got involved probably back in 2012. I started helping Bill, K5LN, mainly just relays. And then after the winter break that we get on 20 meters, I started just helping Bill out as a net controller, and then Bill moved on to some other interests in 2013, and then I ended up taking it on ever since then and been doing it ever since 2013, shortly after Dayton 2013.
Well, we appreciate everything that you do. And the 20-meter net is now starting to warm up now that the warm spring season is coming in and we have longer days. So that's going to be a fun time. Now, just some personal background on you guys. Kevin, what got you into ham radio? And Victor, if you want to show the pictures I sent you, you can do that while he's answering. What got you into ham radio and what makes you stay with it? And what else do you do?
Well, by trade, I'm an IT guy. I'm retired military, so I do a little bit of everything. Ham radio was just for me, just a natural progression. Always been into electronics and did the hi-fi thing. And then I started getting into a little bit of video and then I just into the computers. And then after that, just computers and radios, and one thing led to another. And here we are. So, and as far as ham radio goes, I just enjoy talking to people. As everybody knows, when I run the net, if there's not a whole lot of traffic on there, I'll sit and have a little QSO in between there. So so there we are. That's pretty much it. And love my place here now. I've got lots of room to put up more antennas, which will be coming. So so that's about it on that that realm.
There you go. And those are some good pictures there in the background. Steve, same question. What got you into ham radio and what do you also do besides the net?
Oh, holy smokes. It's been 40 years ago when I got into ham radio. I was a teenager. I started just SWLing and then got really interested in amateur radio. So as a teenager, I went and took the code test and got my license. And then next thing I know it, I'm going down to the FCC office and upgrading and and so I kind of launched my career, and I'm a communications tech. And so I work for utility, doing all the telecommunications work for the utility. Basically, we do the DC plant all the way up to fiber optics cable. I've done it all, climb towers. Been doing that work for 35 years now. So it's been started young, and there you go, right there. And then I'm a volunteer firefighter. I've been doing that since 1987. So keep busy between my volunteer work in ham radio and my firefighting service and work. It's, it keeps me busy, but every chance I get, I come out here into the shack and go ahead and fire up the old Collins or the Yaesu's that are right behind me and get on the air as much as I can.
That sounds super. Well, thank you first for being a volunteer firefighter. Nobody can ever miss those outfits that you had on in that picture. That's great. And thanks for running part of the Ham Nation net there. We always appreciate you guys' help so much. Let's talk a little bit about the 300th special event. Kevin, you're going to be running out of Florida as Whiskey 4 Hotel. Tell us, where can we find you in the last week of May?
Well, let's see here. It depends. As we, you know, there was a question there about spotting and all that, but Ham Nation 300 special event, I'll be working most everything, mostly on phone, but just look for me there. I'll try and put information out there when I'm on the air. I'll be on 40 meters, 20 meters, 17 meters. I will try and do some PSK, but mainly on 40 and 20 and 17. That's where I really like. My station, as you can see in the back, I'm pretty much set up for 40 meters. So as everybody can tell that when I'm on the air, I can pretty much be heard. So that's where I'll be at. But if I'm there, if you guys want to work me, go ahead. And if you want more information, at least from my side of the house, you can go to QRZ. And as Amanda said, just look up the special call, Whiskey 4 Hotel, and all the information is there. And any questions, just email any one of us here. We'd be more than happy to answer any questions you got as best we can.
All right. Well, thanks, Kevin. You've been a great, what's the word I'm looking for? The herder of cats to get us all involved to go to get into these meetings and get this planning done. Let's put it that way. And Steve, what about you? Where are we going to be able to find you during the special event? Go ahead.
Oh, we'll be on the usual bands, obviously 20 meters. And I'll be on 40, 75 meters to try to pick up all the local guys here in the Pacific Northwest. I'll be operating from Washington State with W7H like I did 2 years ago when we did the 200th special event. So if 15 meters opens up, we'll give it a shot there. And then we'll also try 10 meters like we did a couple years ago to hopefully see if we can get some of you technicians that have some HF capabilities. So if you got 10 meters and we get lucky and get the band starts to open up, I'll swing the beam around and we'll see if we can pick you up on 10 meters. If not, then primarily 20, 40, and 75 will be where you can find me.
Very good. Amanda? Well, I look forward to working with you guys. Go ahead.
I did want to mention, too, that this event here, we've tried to go out of our way, and also for the technician class operators that don't have HF privileges, I don't want to leave out, we've also got stuff set up for the digital modes, for D-Star, DMR, and all those kind of digital modes. Now, and also, Gordon has requested those that have fusion capability, if you hear him on the air on fusion, you'll be able to work him as well, so... We tried to encompass everybody in the ham radio realm of things, including the technician class operators.
You're absolutely correct. And we look forward to giving out all of those certificates. So we definitely wanted to make sure everyone was going to be involved and have a chance to work somehow, some way or another. So you never know. I might start on DMR one night and just start calling CQ on one of the DMR mark frequencies. Who knows? I'll spot myself, of course, because that's allowed because it's not a contest. So anyhow, thank you guys so much for being here. One more thing from each of you. We're going to have the after show nets. Kevin, where are you going to be at tonight?
Well, I did say 71.95, but I'm going to go back to 71.92 and see if it's open, because that's pretty much where we've been hanging for the last several months, and that seems to work out pretty well across the country. So we'll start there and see what happens and go from there.
Very good. Well, I hope to join you tonight. And Steve, what about you? You running 20 meters tonight?
Oh, yeah. We'll be running 20 meters. 14,268. The band looks like there's some activity on the band scope. So here in a few minutes, come and join me on 14,268.
Sounds perfect. Let me announce the other nets tonight. We have the D-Star net running on 14 Charlie. That's going on right now. And look, stay tuned, you guys, because next week we're going to have some more of the net controllers on. So I look forward to interviewing all of them. Also, we have EchoLink on the Dewdrop Inn and also the DMR net on TAC 311. So I look forward to having all of these guys on before the 300th. So you guys get to learn and know who all of these people are. So thank you so much for being on here. You too. We appreciate it. We'll be hearing you on the HF waves here real shortly. And George, I'll send it over to you to wrap this up.
Okay. Well, thanks, Amanda. Another fun show tonight. Sorry Bob couldn't be with us, but, you know, if you hadn't got a good internet connection, it's just hard. But fortunately, this weather should be moving on out, and we hope he'll be back next week, and we'll pick back up with those Pine Board radio projects there. I guess that is going to do it for this week. Thanks to Don Wilbanks, Gordo, Amanda, Valerie, and all our guests tonight. So 7-3, we'll see you right here again next week.
7-3.